The insourcing versus outsourcing debate continues, and it's the subject of your DOD report today, every weekday afternoon at 40 minutes after the hour. It's hotter than ever at the Defense Department as they try to figure out the right balance between contracting and in-house employees to meet their missions. David Berteau is director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and he's my guest to talk about what CSIS is learning about finding that balance. Mr. Berteau, thank you for being on the program today. It's great to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir. I'm glad to join you.
This report is called DOD Workforce Cost Realism Assessment. What did you find, you and your four co-authors?
Well, Francis, what we found was really there's two kind of related issues that tie together here. One of them you already mentioned, and that's the question of insourcing, that is converting government contractors into government civilians or civil servants, if you will. And there the question is, you know, which one costs more and how do you compare the costs fairly, that is, fully allowing real costs on both sides. But there's a second question that comes into play, and we spent a lot of time on the second question, and that is, even if it's not comparing for insourcing purposes, the government should still know what persons cost at the time they make decisions to add or move them around. There really needs to be sort of truth in budgeting, if you will.
Trying to figure out what people cost, though, is kind of a microcosm, I guess, of the broader problem that DOD has with its financial systems in general. They don't just struggle to quantify what people cost. They seem to be struggling to quantify what a lot of things cost.
Well, and of course, some of that goes back to the basic nature of government budgeting. Ultimately, the first objective is to make sure that we're compliant with the Constitution. That is, that the government doesn't spend any money that wasn't appropriated by the Congress. A much more secondary question is what did you get for your money? But that's really what we're trying to get at.
And what did you find about what they're getting for their money? Are they able to get a handle on it at all, or is that issue one?
Well, we found that the first question you have to have is, what's your methodology for figuring out the cost? Obviously, you have simple elements like how much do you pay people, but then you have all of the costs, the retirement, the health care, and then you have the overhead and the facilities costs and the support costs. What we found was that DOD had a reasonably good methodology for building in the direct costs, that is, those that come straight out of DOD's budget. They were quite short, though, when it came to looking at the broader cost to the whole federal government. And while this may not matter to the Defense Department, it clearly matters to the President, to the Office of Management and Budget, and to the Congress and the taxpayers.
There's been some mixed messages, I think it's fair to say, coming from DOD about where they stand on this. You cite in your report something that we reported on in April of 2009, Secretary Gates saying that there would be a lot more things coming back in-house at DOD. That seems to have been, they've stepped back from that a little bit, shall we say, in the interim. So how does a contractor know, other than direct communication from the Pentagon, what is right to expect in the next 6 months, 18 months, several years?
Well, what you point out of Secretary Gates changing his mind on this between April of 2009 and last August 2010, where he basically said, I was misled on this insourcing and we need to pull back from it, that's not only changing over time. I think there's another disconnect, and that's between the headquarters and what the field activities are often doing. So there's guidance from the top at DOD, but what we found is all too often components out in the field are either ignoring that guidance or ignoring parts of that guidance, whatever is to their convenience. From a contractor's point of view, they're really in a tough spot here. Obviously, if they're dependent on the Defense Department and the federal government for their revenue, it's hard for them to say, oh, we don't want to play this game the way you guys are playing it. On the other hand, if the government can walk in and say, I like Tom and Jane and Joe off of your staff, they need to come to work for me or else you're going to lose your contract, and we saw evidence of this happening, then that's not fair.
The idea that the DOD is kind of cherry-picking the staffs at the under the threat of contractors losing the contracts that they have is something that I had not heard before.
Yeah, and actually, I don't want to go too far in that regard, Francis, because there are a couple of very important elements that come into play. If you look back over history, you go back to, say, the end of the Cold War, where we started drawing down the defense budget during the early 90s, and we were also drawing down the workforce. But then in the mid-90s, we saw a change. The workforce kept coming down, but the dollars started going back up, both dollars spent on weapon systems and, equally importantly, dollars spent on contracts for services. And over time, that gap has expanded so that the Defense Department's career civilian workforce really is no longer big enough or experienced enough to manage all the contracts that are in place. So it's important to rebuild and reconstitute that acquisition workforce. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is DOD making decisions based on essentially a short-sighted view and an incomplete view of what the real costs are.
And that's maybe the more important element at this point because, as you well know, you can't just go out and sign up acquisition workforce people as quickly as you want. It takes 5 to 7 years, seems to be the general consensus, from hire date for somebody to really be equipped and ready to go. So figuring these things out in the interim and finding a solution in the interim, even if DOD was going to go out today and bring on the amount of people they needed, is really critical, I would think.
Right. You can train people more rapidly, but you can't accumulate experience except by spending a year doing a year's worth of work.
Mm-hmm.
You can't squeeze 9 months by working nine times as hard into 1 month.
We're almost out of time, and I wanted to spend some time talking about A-76 because you referenced that in this report as well. What did we learn from the A-76 situation? Senator Mikulski and Congressman Sarbanes introducing legislation now to kind of turn off A-76 for the time being. But what did you learn and report about A-76 in this?
What we looked at was not so much the results of A-76, because actually that's been studied quite a bit, and it says that when we do have a competition, the government ends up saving money regardless of whether the private sector wins or the government wins. But what we mostly looked at there, more importantly, was whether or not through A-76 we had ways of getting at some of these cost elements. How much is government overhead? What's the share of insurance and taxes that won't be paid if the contractor doesn't have the work? And what we found was that A-76 actually provides the opportunity to see that the government can calculate these costs. The Defense Department really could come up with numbers. They're choosing to ignore the numbers rather than ignoring the numbers because they're too hard.
Mr. Berteau, I appreciate your time to talk about this issue today. It's an interesting report, and we have it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. I appreciate you being on to talk about it.
Great. Thank you, Francis. I appreciate the opportunity, and we welcome continued discussion on this.
Well, happy to do it, and look forward to having you come back. David Berteau is Senior Advisor and Director of the Defense Industrial Initiatives Group at the Center for Strategic and International Studies on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can see that report anytime you want at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.